to CL Talk, the leading podcast for the legal profession across Canada, brought to you by Canadian Lawyer Magazine. I'm Tim Wilber, the managing editor of Canadian Lawyer Magazine. Today, I'm speaking with Radha Kirpan, the vice chair, Vancouver managing partner, and national leader of ESG strategy and solutions at Bennett Jones. Kirpan will also be appearing at Canadian Lawyer's upcoming Women in Law Summit in Toronto in April, where she will speak about intersectionality and its benefits for legal teams. Welcome, Radha.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for including me.
First off, can you tell me about your practice and how you took on a leadership role at Bennett Jones?
So my practice started many years ago, and it started in Manitoba, Ontario, New York, back to Ontario, and now in Vancouver since July 2016. It has been on environmental law, governance, also some commercial litigation that I did at the very beginning of my career, and governance issues, corporate social responsibility, and ESG and sustainability. So when ESG was coined many years ago, it was coined by investors, environmental, social, and governance. It brings together a lot of the work that I've done over the years and in many jurisdictions in Canada and in the US.
Great. And I want to talk about the topic intersectionality, but before we get into it, I think it's important to define it, and I think it may mean different things to different people. So can you tell me how you see that term, what definition is for you, and how it fits in with diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Yes, for me, it is very much about, I understand that intersectionality, I understand that it's a framework that describes how we overlapping social identities connect to racism, and that includes race, class, gender, sexual orientation, age, ethnicity, religion, disability, and more to create an authentic identity. I understand that. And I think it's also linked to systems and how people are can be excluded from systems. So I'm not an expert on intersectionality. I can only speak from my experiences. And so I do not approach anything with an oppressor and oppressed mentality. I think it's important to define DEI, which is diversity, simply put, is the ways in which people differ from one another. And having a diverse workplace means having people of different backgrounds. So it could include inherent diversity, such as race and gender, and acquired diversity, such as language and experience. So when I think of diversity, I think of it in its broadest sense, and I want to include as many people as possible. And so when you think about equity, it's fair treatment, access, opportunity, advancement for all, understanding that different people have different diverse backgrounds and that people's positions should be considered in fair treatment. It recognizes advantages and barriers exist and an equal starting point from which individuals start. And inclusion means that diverse people are treated equitably and have power and a voice within an organization. So this is what this means to me. And this is how, when I talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I look at it from a broader sense, and I don't look at it from an oppressor, oppressed perspective.
Great. And intersectionality, you know, I'm not an expert in this either. To me, just in the context of the women in law, which is what you're speaking about, where you're speaking about this, is sort of recognizing that there are other differences that are important as well outside of gender, framing something in a gender lens. Is that
absolutely
fair?
Absolutely.
Great. And can you tell me now about your experiences and how they've shaped your understanding of intersectionality in the legal profession?
Yeah. Well, my lived experiences, I think, helped me understand how people with different experiences think about opportunities, risks, rewards, goals. So I'm a woman of color, a South Asian woman, immigrant to Canada. I'm also a Francophone. So I bring a set of different and diverse lived experiences as a result. I think we've been taught in the past about discrimination through a single lens, such as race or sex, but it goes beyond that. So what I found very helpful for me, I've had allies, I've found sponsors, mentors have all been extremely important in my career. So what, and I just like I have those experiences have also allowed me to accumulate sort of privileges as well. So I've lived and have and still have a number of privileges as a result of all the things that we've done. So this is my experience. So I can talk from that perspective.
Thanks. And so how do you feel DEI initiatives overall focusing on intersectionality have evolved in your time in the profession?
Well, I would say this, when I started a long time ago, like in the 90s and all that, it was not conversations we were having. People were not discussing the DEI and how it had advanced. There's a lot of discussions now. There's a lot of awareness of this. We have to continue to build on the awareness, but also action is also important. It's not just awareness. We have to continue to move. We made lots of advances. There's still work to be done. We are more aware of it as organizations, as firms, as a profession. And how do we then implement it? How do we apply it? How does it reflect our everyday? Is something that we're still working on. And I think, and we continue to make progress on it by having people of different experiences and different living experiences talk about it and have conversations and say, how do we deal with it with allocation of work? How do we deal with it in retaining people? How do we deal with it in hiring people? How do we deal with it in making sure that people feel empowered, right? Those are the kind of conversations that we're having now that we didn't before. And so we've seen this evolution. Like we don't have it yet, but it's not about having it. I think what's important to remember, this is a platform or this is an opportunity to bring people, make them feel empowered and continue to do so. How we do it, we'll continue to evolve as we understand things more. Things change, but there are things that do not change. People's thoughts, people's expectations, people's goals, how people react to those things. I mean, those change, but how they react to it is based on their experiences and their past experiences and their current ones. So that is it's a living organism that will continue to grow and improve over time.
So you're a lawyer, you know, lawyers like to have concrete facts and data. So can you share some examples of recent examples where intersectionality has improved your team or client outcomes or something in your world?
Yeah, I think, if you look at ESG or sustainability, for example, if you look at that and you look at the work that we're doing with boards on diversity, equity, and inclusion, it is really about making sure that boards of organizations and organizations are responding to the public and the employees. And so what you see is you see initiatives being done at the board level and then operationally at an organization operationally that go beyond tokenism. You know, it used to be, okay, we have to have one woman here, or we have to have one person here. It's not like that anymore. And it's not about quota, it's not about tokenism. So that's what we're seeing. And one thing I do want to say, because I do practice in Aboriginal law, is that when it comes to Indigenous peoples and EDI, I want to highlight that Indigenous peoples and First Nations, some First Nations want to be called First Nations and other Indigenous peoples. So I'll be respectful by saying First Nations and other Indigenous peoples are not simply seeking EDI. They're seeking self-government, self-determination. So that becomes even more complex. So it's important to keep this distinction in mind. We're in Canada and we're cultivating relationships with First Nations and Indigenous groups. So it's a vital aspect of an organization's ESG practices. So those are the kind of things that that I'm seeing in my own, in the work that I, where I advise clients, and also in our own work at the firm, is looking at our processes and making sure that we have that lens.
Right. So you spoke about, you know, your work in ESG and the board level of your many of your clients. So look at the legal profession. What challenges do you think underrepresented women face there? And what are some of the solutions, or where should things be moving in the profession specifically?
Well, they are still, as a profession, there's still not enough women staying in the profession and becoming partners. Or once they do, they may not stay. So that's still a thing that we need to deal with. And people take maternity leave. And now people take paternity leave, so parental leave. So as people take parental leave and they come back, how do we assess that year or that 9 months or 6 months that they decide to take off and then still be a valued member of the profession and firm? They do. They bring their experiences that they just had to the table. And so we need to make sure that they feel included, they feel empowered, they feel that they haven't sort of, that they're still available for opportunities. So they're given opportunities to succeed. So that continues to be an area that we need to work on. I know it's sort of gender related, but there are also a lot of firms, including our firm, who have communities and to look at how we look at our processes and how to make sure from the board level all the way that it and to recruitment of the laterals and recruitment of students, that would bring that lens and diversity lens to it. And by diversity, again, I mean the broadest sense. So one of the things I look at when I'm interviewing someone is not just their grades at law school. Hopefully they're doing well. And most of the people who show up have done very well at law school. But then it's also about their experiences, their life experiences. What have they lived that makes them suitable for this profession? And that could make the profession a better profession by bringing in their experiences. And what are the potential of that person? So that's sort of, those are the kind of things that we're having. Those are the kind of discussions that we didn't have before, but we're having now.
Well, that's great. I had a few more questions, but you answered them in the follow-up to what I just asked. Is there anything else that I didn't ask about that you think would be relevant for law firms who are working through these issues? I know there's many challenges with improving diversity, whether it's gathering the data about what this actual situation versus, you know, making people actually feel included. So what would be your advice to law firm leaders in other contexts about where the, you know, how to succeed in addressing intersectionality and diversity inclusion more generally?
Yeah, well, so I think when people look around the table and everything they're doing, whether it's a pitch, whether it's providing the opportunities to speak, whatever it is, and or whether it is to recruit people and make decisions about recruitment and talent retention, who's around the table? Who's absent? Who's present? So look at that in a top of mind. Ask yourself a question. Encourage people to be allies, to support each other. And so that we talk about mentorship. Lots of firms do it very well. We have, you know, system of mentorships. We also have sort of informal mentors, which is great. But it's also important that everyone find a sponsor or two or three. And it's good to sort of cultivate that, encourage people at the very beginning. One of my first speech when I sort of welcome people to the firm, the students, I encourage that right away. I said, as you're doing this, you're going to find people you like to imitate, people you don't want to imitate. That's okay. You find your own way, but you also may find people you want to be, who would be your sponsors, no matter what the firm is saying, this is your mentor, but you may want to identify that the mentors and the sponsors, go and reach out to them, explain to them how you can be helpful to them, and not just receiving, but giving. So I think engagement at each level of the organization is imperative. So let me finish by saying this. When you think about DEI, and I know there's been a lot of publicity recently about DEI and some of the issues facing DEI, I think about bringing people together, empowering them, and recognizing that people's experiences have a tremendous impact on their goals, their beliefs, their fears, their hopes, their triggers, their expectations. If you think about it that way, you would then want to engage them in a way that would bring out the best in them in the interest of your organization. That's how I would leave it.
Well, thank you so much, Radha. It was a pleasure speaking with you today. And we look forward to hearing from you and seeing you at the Women in Law event in April.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it as well. Thank you for this opportunity to share my thoughts.
Thank you for tuning in to CL Talk. You can listen to the latest episodes on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and all major listening channels. Just search for CL Talk.